Brought to you by Thomas Allgaier and Frenes, this edition highlights key LinkedIn posts on field marketing in weeks 20 and 21. Frenes supports clients with identifying target attendees for events, crafting outreach that cuts through the noise, and driving qualified registrations through strategic LinkedIn engagement. You can find more info in the description.
Right.
Okay, so let's unpack this. I mean, imagine for a second you're dropping, I don't know, $100,000 on this massive, beautifully designed booth at some tier one industry conference.
Oh, yeah. We've all seen those.
Right. And you fly your team out, you scan like 500 badges over three really exhausting days, and you fly home feeling like absolute champions.
High fives all around.
Exactly. But then fast forward 3 months, you're staring at a completely silent inbox, and the actual pipeline generated from that massive investment is, well, it's exactly zero.
Yeah, that is a total nightmare scenario.
It really is. And today, we're taking a deep dive into why that exact scenario just keeps happening to brilliant B2B marketing teams. And more importantly, how the best in the business are actually fixing it.
For sure.
We've basically spent the week analyzing the top field marketing conversations across LinkedIn during calendar weeks 20 and 21 of 2026. So we're pulling out the exact strategies that are working on the ground right now.
And honestly, it is the perfect time for this deep dive, because if you're listening and you work in B2B marketing, you probably already know that the old playbook is just completely broken.
Oh, completely.
I mean, we are so far beyond the era of just, you know, showing up, handing out some branded stress balls and hoping revenue just magically appears.
Right. The stress ball strategy doesn't cut it anymore.
It really doesn't. And what we found in the source material this week is this massive structural shift. Top teams are completely rewiring their event strategies. They're treating field marketing less like a line item expense for brand awareness and entirely like a precision revenue engine.
Wow, yeah. So we're going to look at the mechanics of that, right? Like pipeline accountability and how AI is fundamentally changing the operational speed of event teams.
Exactly. And also why, and this is kind of ironic, in an age of high-tech automation, deeply curated human experiences are actually becoming your ultimate competitive advantage.
I love that. So let's start with that terrifying post-event silence I mentioned earlier, because, I mean, we've all been there, right? You get back from the trade show and the momentum just evaporates. Like, why does that happen so consistently?
So there's actually a brilliant term for this that came up in the discussions we analyzed. Mirba Sarayurvi and her former colleagues coined this phrase, event brains.
Event brains.
Yeah, event brains. It describes that sort of bizarre psychological and operational crash that happens right after a major event wraps up.
Oh, I know that feeling.
Right. Think about it. For months, the entire team is just running on pure adrenaline. You're coordinating logistics, booth builds, traffic.
Stressing over shipping delays.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then the event ends. The booth is packed into a crate. Everyone flies home, and then nothing. The adrenaline just drops.
Yeah, it's like falling off a cliff.
Right. There are no follow-ups queued up, no results, just silence.
Mm.
And Mirva points out that events fail precisely in this silent window. They fail because teams go into the event without a pre-planned operational follow-up system.
So they treat the event as the finish line.
Exactly. They treat that closing keynote as the finish line when really it's supposed to be the starting gun.
Man, that event brains fog is so real. But, well, before we even get to the follow-up, think about the empty seats at the event itself. I was reading through these posts and Liz Lathan shared some data on attendee drop-off that genuinely made me pause.
Oh, the attrition stats, right?
Yeah, she calls it the illusion of inconsequence. Essentially, attendees wake up on the morning of a conference, they look at their crowded inbox, and they just decide, you know, my one absence won't matter.
Which makes sense on an individual level.
Sure, but when everyone thinks that way, the numbers become staggering. I mean, according to her stats, virtual event attrition is sitting at around 60%, and free in-person events are seeing about 50% attrition.
50%.
Ah.
Which is painful enough, but it gets even worse when you look at the premium tiers.
Yes. Even carefully designed, highly curated micro events, where you might only be inviting like a handful of key executives, they're still seeing about 20% attrition.
That's wild.
It is. That means if you invite 10 VIPs to an exclusive dinner, two of them simply won't show up. And Lee makes the point that attendee drop-off is no longer a failure of your marketing. It's just a harsh industry standard that you have to plan for.
Like overbooking flights.
Exactly. She compared it to how airlines deliberately overbook flights because they know a certain percentage of passengers will miss their connection. You have to plan for the reality of the buyer's calendar, not just celebrate your initial registration numbers.
Which really brings up a fascinating tension regarding how we allocate our budgets, you know? Because if you're already fighting a 50% attrition rate on the front end, you absolutely cannot afford to waste the people who actually do show up.
Every conversation is gold.
Right. But what we're seeing from practitioners on the ground, well, people like Taxi Bansal and Kate Slomkowski, is that most teams are doing exactly the opposite.
Yeah, they pointed out this recurring frustration, right? Most companies spend roughly 90% of their energy and their budget on just being there, like the booth architecture, the flights, the hotel blocks, the swag.
The fun stuff.
Yeah, all the visible stuff. And then maybe, if they're lucky, they spend 10% of their effort on what happens before and after the event. It's wild when you think about it.
It really is.
Okay, let's unpack this with an analogy. It's like spending all your money to build this gorgeous retail store, but then you forget to hire cashiers.
Oh, that's good.
Right. You have all this foot traffic, but absolutely no way to actually close a sale. You did all the hard work to build the connection, but built zero mechanism to continue it.
That is the perfect analogy.
Yeah.
You're building this incredible, expensive environment, but completely neglecting the transaction mechanism. So how do top teams actually fix this? Mustafa Yunus shared a very hardline rule for 2026.
Oh, yeah, I saw this one.
He argues that leadership should not approve a single event budget unless the marketing team defines exactly who owns the lead follow-up, how quickly those leads get contacted, and what success actually looks like.
And there was a specific timeline for that, right?
Yes. By quickly, he means a service level agreement, or SLA, of 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
He shared this really painful past experience where a packed room of engaged prospects turned into just two closed deals 3 months later.
Ouch, why?
Because the follow-up was treated as a casual administrative task instead of the core purpose of the event.
Okay, but let me push back on that for a second. Having a 24-hour SLA sounds great in a boardroom, but how do you actually enforce that? I mean, enterprise sales reps are notoriously busy.
Very true.
If you just hand them a giant CSV file of 400 badge scans on a Friday afternoon, they aren't going to call them by Saturday morning. Marketing is going to say sales dropped the ball. Sales is going to say the leads were garbage. And leadership is going to say events are a waste of money.
You're exactly right. And that classic finger pointing is what kills pipeline. Manpreet Wadhwani provided a really sharp insight on this mechanism. He noted that your event pipeline doesn't actually disappear. You just lose visibility mid-funnel.
What does that look like in practice?
Well, 30 days after an event, the initial momentum fades. Enterprise buyers regroup internally, their priorities shift, and if you aren't actively tracking account behavior post-event, your sales team is just guessing who to focus on. It is not a demand problem, it is a coverage problem.
Ah, okay, so to fix that coverage problem, you have to engineer the follow-up before you even get on the plane.
Yeah.
Jimmy Pagan shared a massive win that illustrates exactly how this works on the ground. His team generated roughly 400,000 euros in early pipeline at major European events like OMR and Sauciest.
That's a serious number.
Right. And sure, they had great booth traffic, but the real magic was operational. They didn't just scan badges. They used per attendee Calendly links. They used custom UTM parameters to track physical interactions back to digital campaigns. There was absolute clarity on lead ownership.
So no finger pointing.
Exactly. And here's the kicker. The exact nature of the sales follow-up was agreed upon and locked in before they even set foot on the show floor.
See, that's the key. They didn't wait for that event brain silence to figure out their next move. They pre-built the engine.
Yeah.
But if we connect this to the bigger picture, you quickly hit a ceiling.
How so?
Well, you can maybe do that intense personalized follow-up manually for 20 VIPs. But what happens when you scan 800 badges? You can't scale a 24-hour highly personalized follow-up SLA without a massive operational bottleneck.
Oh.
And that is exactly where AI and modern event tech are completely changing the paradigm.
Which makes total sense. If you want a rep to follow up within 24 hours with a message that actually references the specific conversation they had, someone or something has to process all that data instantly.
Exactly.
But I think we need to be clear about what we mean by AI here because it's become such a buzzword.
Right. It's crucial to separate the gimmick from the utility. Alicia Boykin framed this perfectly in the discussions we reviewed. She pointed out that AI isn't going to replace the event marketer. Like an AI isn't walking a trade show floor.
Yeah.
It isn't building trust over a steak dinner. And it certainly isn't lugging heavy boxes of brochures across a massive hotel property midnight. What AI is an essential, highly efficient extra teammate.
So what does that teammate actually do on the ground?
It handles the repetitive workflows that traditionally slow marketers down for weeks. For example, instead of having an intern spend 3 days manually copying attendee data from a conference website into a spreadsheet, AI tools scrape and structure that data in 2 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and teams are using it to instantly draft variations of invite copy based on attendee personas. They're using platforms like Nook's AI sequencing to automatically trigger highly personalized invites and LinkedIn connection requests the second a prospect registers for an event.
Wow, so it takes the heavy lifting completely out of the scale.
Exactly.
And it seems like the baseline for what constitutes a good tech stack is getting incredibly sophisticated. Alex Reynolds laid out a complete 9-pillar tech stack showing how elite B2B event teams are operating right now.
Yeah, that post was incredibly detailed.
It really was. We aren't just talking about a basic CRM anymore. These teams are using tools like Vendalux to gather deep attendee intelligence.
Right, Vendalux acts almost like a crystal ball. It allows marketing teams to know exactly which target accounts will be in the room, meaning they're booking high-value meetings weeks before the event badges are even printed.
And then on top of that, Reynolds pointed out that they are layering intent platforms like Sixth Sense over that attendee data. And for those who might not be deep in the ops side, intent platforms act kind of like a radar.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
They monitor the web to see which companies are actively researching your specific solutions. So instead of a sales rep spraying generic emails to a list of 1,000 attendees, they can look at the data and say, okay, these 50 attendees from these specific companies were researching our product category at 2 a.m. last night. Let's focus all our VIP dinner invites on them.
It is surgical precision.
Yeah.
And the thing is, that precision is no longer viewed as a nice to have. Attendees and planners just expect a frictionless tech-enabled experience now.
For sure.
Huang An shared a rather blunt take on this that sparked a lot of conversation. A colleague of hers recently attended an AI developer conference. And shockingly, there was absolutely zero AI incorporated into the actual attendee experience.
Wait, really? At an AI conference?
Yes. There was no AI-powered matchmaking to suggest who they should network with. No smart chatbot in the event app. No automated session recaps. Her verdict was pretty harsh. If you're running an AI-themed conference in 2026 and you fail to include a single AI feature for the attendees, you have absolutely failed. It's a massive miss.
Yeah, that's a total failure of show, don't tell. And this tech integration extends all the way down to the physical logistics of the event itself. Mitchell Kennedy highlighted how platforms like EventMobi are now automating VIP and paid session access.
Which saves so much hassle.
Right, because think about the physical friction of a traditional conference. You have this highly anticipated VIP-only session, and there's a massive line out the door because a staff member is manually checking names off a clipboard.
And those awkward conversations.
Exactly. Wait, should this person be in here? Let me check the second page. Automating session visibility and access via smart badges or apps removes that entire headache. The technology becomes invisible, but the experience becomes seamless.
Yeah, it just runs in the background.
But wait, I have to stop here because this is where things get really interesting and a bit concerning for me.
Okay, lay it on me.
If every single B2B company listening to this goes out and buys the exact same AI tools, if we are all using the same algorithms to scrape the same attendee lists and the same AI sequencers to draft the same personalized emails based on the same Sixth Sense intent data, aren't we just going to risk drowning buyers in a sea of identical robotic spam?
That is a very valid point.
I mean, how do we prevent this highly efficient machine from completely stripping the humanity out of our marketing?
Well, that is the defining tension of B2B marketing right now. And you're entirely justified in pushing back against this blind automation craze. The tools are incredible, but they are a trap if used poorly.
Yeah.
Matthew Erbstein spoke directly to this after attending the Experiential Marketing Summit. He observed that the industry is currently in this deep honeymoon phase with AI. We are trying to streamline and automate every single touch point. But in doing so, we risk removing the human element from what is fundamentally a human experience.
That makes a lot of sense.
He shared a quote from the summit that really anchors this whole concept. He said, AI can buy you time, but it can't buy you soul.
Wow. AI can buy you time, but it can't buy you soul.
I think that perfectly bridges us into the final core insight from this week's data, because the reality is your buyers are exhausted.
Totally burnt out.
Emily Dilbeck pointed this out beautifully in her post. She noted that prospects aren't ignoring your cold outreach because they inherently hate vendors. They are ignoring it because the outreach feels entirely empty.
It's just fake personalization.
Exactly. It's a generic pitch slapped together by a bot. followed by a presumptuous Calendly link from a total stranger. Buyers are exhausted by automated selling. So the ultimate differentiator in B2B marketing right now isn't who has the better algorithm, it is who can deliver deeply curated, human-led experiences.
Which forces us to ask a very basic but critical question. What do attendees actually want when they sacrifice 3 days of their life, leave their families, and travel to your event?
Winnie Porter shared some recent Forrester research that answers this definitively. 66% of attendees say they want more immersive experiential activities. Another 66% want more structured, intentional networking. But only 23% want more keynotes.
Wait, only 23%?
Yeah. Think about that. People do not want to sit passively in rows of uncomfortable ballroom chairs being talked at by a thought leader. They want active participation. They want to connect with the peers sitting next to them.
And Ashley Cook made a brilliant observation regarding who is actually getting this right. She noted that women's conferences are currently leading the charge in this exact shift.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah, they are moving aggressively away from the traditional passive session model and pivoting heavily toward curated community, wellness, and direct mentorship. They're intentionally designing events around executive access and a relationship building rather than just broadcasting information. It is a blueprint the rest of the B2B industry desperately needs to study.
But designing that kind of organic interaction requires rigorous architectural thought. I mean, you can't just shove 50 executives into a hotel ballroom with a cash bar and expect magical business relationships to form.
Right. You have to design the flow of the room. Kayla Drake shared her rule of three for hosted events, and it is honestly a masterclass in experiential design. Her premise is that time is the absolute truest currency we ask our attendees to give us.
For sure.
So we have to curate that time to allow connections to form naturally. Her rule is that during a single hosted event, you must give attendees 3 different physical locations to connect in.
Okay. How does that actually map out during an evening?
So, for example, you start with a standing reception. People have a drink in their hand, the energy is high, and it's very easy to float around and make quick introductions. Then you physically move the group into a second space for a seated dinner with carefully assigned seating.
Which forces deeper conversation.
Exactly. Sustained conversation with specific targets. And finally, you create a transition moment like moving to a lounge area or doing a seat swap for dessert.
What is so psychologically smart about that is how it manipulates the energy in the room. Every time you force a physical shift, you break up the natural cliques that form. It forces new interactions organically without it ever feeling like forced, awkward corporate networking.
Exactly. It's the difference between throwing an unforgettable dinner party and just renting a corporate conference room with some catering. Laurent Leclésio made this exact point after attending the Blue Yonder Icon flagship event.
What did he say?
He observed that the very best events aren't just organized by project managers, they are hosted. They require a level of care, precision, and hospitality that makes people feel individually recognized. Even in a world powered by massive AI datasets, the actual business of B2B remains deeply, undeniably human.
That is so true. However, we have to bring this all the way back to the revenue imperative we started with. Because a beautiful human dinner party is great, but how do you scale the impact of that highly curated moment so it drives pipeline long after the dessert plates are cleared?
The ultimate question.
Right. Jay Manash offered a brilliant framework for this. He argues that modern marketing teams need to treat the trade show floor like a CBS content studio.
Okay, break down the mechanics of that. What does a content studio approach actually look like for a field marketer?
It means you do not let the event die the moment the doors close. You don't just leave with some iPhone photos and a spreadsheet of badge scans. Jay operates on the widely accepted stat that it takes roughly 13 pieces of content before a buyer decides to actively interact with the brand.
13? Wow.
Yeah. So you use the live event as your raw material factory. You take a live keynote and you repackage it into a gated webinar. You take the transcript of a panel session and turn it into an SEO-optimized blog post.
That's smart.
You pull a customer aside on the show floor, record a 5-minute conversation about their pain points, and chop that into 6 distinct 90-second clips for LinkedIn. Suddenly, you have engineered the event's second life. You've created 13 distinct digital touchpoints from one single human interaction.
That's incredible leverage.
And when you get a prospect on camera sharing their insights, they suddenly have skin in the game. That is how the live event becomes a starting signal, not a finish line.
And the genius part is it doesn't just have to be the brand's marketing team creating all that content. Daniel Christensen talked about this concept of building advocacy architecture.
Advocacy architecture, I like that.
Yeah, he says we need to stop just marketing at our attendees and start channeling their own excitement. Give them a gift wrap tool to share what they learned, whether that's a beautifully designed graphic, highlighting a specific speaker they loved, or a quick video template about a breakthrough technology they saw at your booth.
Make it easy for them to brag.
Exactly. When you give attendees the platform and the architecture to tell the story in their own voice, they stop being passive badge scans. They become a highly credible, high-performing extension of your own marketing team.
Which really brings this entire deep dive full circle. We use the technology, the intent data, and the AI sequencing to handle the massive scale, the operations, and those 24-hour follow-up SLAs.
Mm.
But we use the live in-person event to do the one thing the algorithm will never be able to do. Compress trust, and build genuine human relationships.
And the data proves that this combination is incredibly effective. I want to anchor this with one final powerful statistic from Priya Santhini. She showed that right now, 52% of B2B marketers call in-person events their most effective marketing channel.
More than half.
More than half. It is beating out email newsletters, it is beating out webinars, and it has completely outpaced social media for tangible ROI. Why? Because the companies that are actually winning in B2B right now are patient. They do the hard work of showing up in person to build the relationship, they use the tech to follow up digitally with precision, and they deeply understand that human connection is and always will be the ultimate conversion tool.
It absolutely is. And this raises an important question for you and your team to think about as you plan your next quarter. If in-person events are truly the ultimate test of human trust in an AI-dominated world, what happens when you finally stop measuring your success by the sheer volume of badge scans and start measuring it by the depth of the relationships you are actually building? Are you brave enough to abandon the vanity metrics that look great in a board deck in order to find the real, tangible revenue that is hiding in the room?
If you enjoyed this episode, new episodes drop every 2 weeks. Also, check out our other editions on account-based marketing, go-to-market, channel marketing, MarTech, social selling, and AI in B2B marketing. Thank you so much for taking this deep dive with us today. And remember to subscribe so you never miss out on the strategies actually working out there in the field.